So I'm here with Tommy Vallier, community developer for TalkShoe.com, and all-round nice guy and web citizen. And I thought I'd just get your recap on Podcap Boston.
Did you want this in Twitter form? Do I get 140 characters or less, or can I go beyond that?
this is a podcast. There are no rules.
Oh, excellent. Excellent. Podcamp Boston was... somebody asked me to do it in one word last time. And I used the word fantastic, but in between the first and second syllables, I inserted an expletive, which I don't think I'll repeat here. The weekend was great. I mean, I got the chance to go down to Boston through very much a community means. Justin Kanacki, the creator behind Something to Be Desired, available at stb.tv, took a bus ride north from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, up to Erie, Pennsylvania, to meet a friend by the name of Tom Duska, also known as Locobone, and you can find him on Twitter at L-O-C-O-B-O-N-E. And he did that Thursday night. They left Erie, Pennsylvania at 8 a.m., and went north to Buffalo, crossed the border, continued around Lake Ontario, went through Toronto, continued eastward to Kingston, got into Kingston at 2 p.m., picked me up, we continued east to the Thousand Islands Bridge, crossed south, went through New York State, and eventually arrived in Boston at 10:30 p.m. on Friday night. So they were in the car for 14 hours.
I don't think even Yahoo Maps would plot that particular route from Erie, Pennsylvania to Boston.
And I could only imagine what the border control agent would have been thinking when they said, "So why are you coming to Canada again?" "Oh, to pick up a Canadian." "To do what?" "To come back down to go to Boston." You realize you could just go straight from Pittsburgh to Boston, correct? "Yeah, but we want to add 9.5 hours to our ride and come to Canada first."
That's astounding.
Yeah, so huge credit to both Justin and Locobone who came all this way to pick me up and bring me down to Boston. So we got there Friday night, we kind of unpacked, we went straight to the music event. Ran into a lot of great people, huge hugs, because nobody expected me to be able to find a way down there, and I tweeted a whole bunch of times that, you know, I wasn't going to Boston, and then showed up Friday night and surprised everyone. And so that was fun. And then Saturday and Sunday, there was a lot of information. I keep telling people, you know, I'm going to have to spend at least a week decompressing. Meanwhile, as things from the weekend keep being... you know, brought up to me. This is actually the third podcast interview I've given since I've come home. And no, one blog and two blogs and now this podcast. So first podcast, but third interview. And as people keep bringing up different things, I'm up to my fifth 8.5 by 11 page of notes of things that I'm recalling from the weekend that I'm scribbling down for future blog posts. And I was chastised greatly by my peers at PodCamp for not blogging as often as I should be, so I'm going to correct that between now and likely February.
Wonderful. I feel great. I discovered yesterday that I'm an internet visionary.
Ooh, that's a good word.
3 weeks ago, when the family was at the Toronto Zoo, I took about 300 pictures, and what do I do with 300 pictures? I LOL catted them and put them up on my blog. And one of them was a T-Rex about to chomp down on me. I can has duct tape guy. So when LOL Soars hit this weekend,
yeah,
I could say, I was there first.
Yeah. But, you know, the funny thing is that at the end of the day, really, it doesn't really matter who was there first. It matters more that the community, you know, comes behind something. Even if it's something as silly as, you know, the LOL Soar, or ICANN has cheeseburgers, or bacon, or, you know, whatever it happens to be, so long as the community begins to rally behind something.
And I question you putting bacon in that category, because I know it's a silly concept and silly idea, but I know that as soon as you guys posted bacon, it was at PodCamp Philly?
Pittsburgh.
I went back and dumped a whole pile of useless stuff from several email boxes and made them work again.
Exactly, and you know what? Everybody did the same thing, and everybody laughed at us and said, you know what? That's so silly. It's such a silly word. And we said, you know what? The name doesn't matter. We could have called it, you know, Tyrannosaurus Rex Mail for all it matters. The name we chose just happened to be a melding of the conversations that were going on at the time. The name doesn't matter. It's the concept behind the name of, you know, these 500 emails we're getting a week from companies and mailing lists and such, and websites specifically, that, you know, it's time that we either look at this and start managing it, because
automated responses you get from forums that you check three times a day anyway.
Exactly. And we said, you know what, people need to, everybody complains that their inboxes are full of this thing, of this type of email. We said, you know, we're not saying that there's a problem and you have to create new mail server handlers and such the way that spam is. What we're saying is, you know, this is actually a situation going on. You don't have to complain that it's in your inbox. You can do something about it right now with filters that are in place in every email program out there. And hey, look, companies, websites, maybe you could wake up to this one too, and you could start changing something. And the people over at Google have looked at how they're handling alerts, and I think they're doing a great job, because they give you an option to have it as it happens, or once a day, or once a week. You can also get Google alerts by RSS. I wish, my big goal is to see Facebook give you the option of a daily digest. So at the end of every day, or week, or month, hey, you have these 15 people who want to be your friends. You have these 7 notifications from these applications. You have,
rather than on or off.
Exactly. Rather than turn them on or turn them off. I'd like to see the option to have, you know, turn them on once a day. I want an email at 6 a.m. that said, you know what, yesterday all of this happened on Facebook, just in case you didn't happen to stop by. And that's my big goal with the whole bacon thing. And, you know, the first thing I did, as soon as I got home from Pittsburgh, I looked at these things and I said, okay, you know what? I'm going to create some filters for this. And I went through my entire inbox. And I have some 8,000 emails. And I went back 2 years. I said, okay, everything from, I believe I went January 1st, 2006 forwards, I'm going to start creating rules for. And if I can. So there's some, you know, a random email from you to me, or from Mark to myself, or from me to Bob or something. I mean, you can't really create a rule for that. But anything that seemed pretty generic, I went through and created rules for. And there's a lot of it that I said, you know what? I love the fact that I get an email from the local grocery store about what's on sale. But I haven't shopped there since June of last year. Why am I still taking this email? I don't even open them anymore. They show up, I click the little check mark, I delete them. And so I opened one finally, and I unsubscribed. And then I did that again and again. It was really good to start unsubscribing some of this kind of stuff. And the next day I got, you know, 10% less email showed up in my inbox as a result of it. And it was great.
Wonderful.
But going back to the community thing, one of the most interesting things that happened at PodCamp was actually in the last, hour of PodCamp. A couple of people, and I don't know for sure who started it, because I came into into what's being called, I think, the powwow. I came into the conversation late, but a couple of people got together in a group, went into one corner, and started a conversation. Next thing you know, this 3-5 person group was 7, 8, 9 people, then 15 people. I think there were probably 35 people sitting around in a big circle, sitting, laying, kneeling, standing, throwing comments in about, you know, okay, we had this conference with 1,200 people, 500 to 700 have shown up. What went wrong, and where can we take PodCamp from here? And that little, there was a session actually on that topic on Saturday, but that little conversation in the back corner actually, I think, got a lot more work done on the PodCamp model in the community than the session on Saturday did.
Well, it's just the way it works, too. As I say, you and I standing at the Merchant Tap House with a very loud, wonderful band playing behind us, and you completely changed my mental paradigm of what it was that I was accomplishing.
And you know what?
New media.
And exactly. It's not necessarily the sessions that, you know, change how you act and how you think about things. I mean, sometimes it is, but it's always, you know, there's often one little 5-minute block that completely changes, you know, how you feel, how you think. Mitch Joel, during his session with CC Chapman this weekend on web tools, I went to the session. I mean, I knew exactly which tools they were going to talk about. They were going to talk about Google and its suite of applications. I know CC's a big, I want to say, Bloglines fan, so I knew they were going to talk about that. I knew Facebook would come up. I knew Twitter would come up. I knew Delicious would come up. So I was well aware of the type of things. Mitch was going to bring up Google Reader and the Google Shared Items. I knew exactly what was going to be talked about, but I just wanted to see what they had to say about these applications. And something that Mitch said was, you know, you can subscribe to any Google alert you want in an RSS feed. Well, that's perfect, because I have a great RSS management system. I love my NetVibes page, and it does me wonders for my RSS subscriptions. And then Mitch said, well, why don't you start subscribing to generic terms? Why don't you start saying, okay, what about podcasting? What about blogging? What about PodCamp? Why don't you start? Because up until then, I subscribed to Google Alerts on things that directly applied to me. I subscribed to PAB. I subscribed to Kingston. I subscribed to My Name. I subscribed to Bacon. I subscribed to TalkShoe and TalkCast. Stuff that really applied to me. And I never thought to start, you know, going beyond that. And so then CeCe made a comment a little later. He said, yeah, and what about for blog posts? If you want to start blogging more and getting more inspiration for blogs, do the same thing. Start subscribing to Google Alerts that will give you ideas for blog posts. And then somebody in the audience, as I was leaving, I overheard the words, Yahoo Pipes. And I thought, you know what? You put a bunch of Google Alerts together in an RSS feed. You use Yahoo Pipes to bring all those feeds together. You now have one master feed of everything you're interested in for blog posts, like blog post inspiration, and everything you're interested in terms of news.
You're doing it again, Tommy.
And
exactly, you're bending my brain.
That's exactly the light bulb that went into my head, because I was looking at what Mitch was saying. I thought, you know what, that's great, but it's nothing. It's just, okay, I can get Google Alerts as RSS, that's great, I'm going to start doing that, this is awesome. Then CC said it for blog posts, I thought, okay, that's great, this is awesome. And then I overheard Yahoo Pipes, and I went out into the audience, into the hallway, I thought, whoa, are you kidding me? And I turned around to try to figure out who it was that might have said that. I wish I could give him credit, because I would, you know, promote his blog or name or podcast or running shoe or whatever he told me to promote, because, I mean, that was huge for me that moment.
I subscribed to Google Reader at Mitch Joel's advice this year, and instantly my feed count went from 100 to 300 because it became manageable. The question is, especially if you start doing all these custom searches and custom alerts, how do you keep the signal-to-noise ratio manageable? Because we're not all Scoble. We can't read 600 blogs.
No, but you know, the thing that really interests me is this Google Shared Items idea, and Mitch is a huge fan of this. And you're right, we can't all read 600 blogs, but if you're reading 50 of them, and I trust you, and you're marking things off that you find interesting, I'm going to read your shared items feed and then read those articles. So, and Chris Brogan calls these people curators, and that's really exactly what they are. If Mark is going to blog about a website, I'm going to check out the website because I trust Mark and I trust his opinion. Same with Justin Kanacki, same with Loco Bone, same with, there's, you know, hundreds of people out there who I respect their opinion, I trust their opinion, and if they say, go check this out, I'll jump, I'll go check that out. So you really don't have to follow the entire web as Scoble does. You really just have to start following specific people. And I watch very carefully Twitter feeds with links in them. I watch very carefully blog posts from my friends with links in them. And don't be afraid to mark an item as read if you haven't read it. There's posts that even people who, you know, I look up to, I respect, I'll look at it and say, you know what, this is a post about him and his kids, as great as that is. I'm just going to mark that one as read right now because there's a couple of reasons. A, I'm not going to see him for another, or see or talk to him for another, you know, 6, 8, 10 weeks. At that point, this specific post will no longer be relevant. And B, it doesn't apply to me. It's, you know, it's him, you know, sharing his personal life with us, and that's wonderful. I'm glad people, you know, are compelled to do that. But I'm... at this point, I'm going to mark it as read. Now, come the 1st of June, a post about, you know, taking your kids to the zoo is something that I'm going to watch a little closer because I'm going to see these people at PAB. Or come the 1st of February, I'll start watching because I will see these people at PodCamp Toronto. So I start watching these personal stories and I start looking at Flickr streams again. So you just have to really, I guess, tune into the right radio stations at the right times, depending on what's going on in the rest of the web at that time.
Fair enough. Any one aha moment or any one person you met that just struck you this weekend?
There were a couple of aha moments. My first one was the random Yahoo Pipes suggestion, and that is literally going to change the way I work online. Another one of the aha moments was that powwow at the back of PodCamp when everyone kind of sat around. And actually Mark said it. He said, you know what, to me, this little powwow, this 30 to 50 people sitting in the back of the room talking about something, looking at a problem, trying to figure out our way around it and solving it, that's PodCamp. The sessions are great, but this PodCamp had a very corporate feel to it originally. We're very fortunate that it didn't expand to the 1,200 people because I don't think it would have felt like a PodCamp. It would have felt like a conference and not, you know, a bunch of participants within the fishbowl getting together to hang out and learn.
But I really get the impression that the particular corporate sponsors, and I'm thinking of Jeff Pulver in particular and Chris Brogan and Chris Penn, they're not corporate people when they're in the community. They're community people.
No, and that's the interesting thing about my job. I work full time for a company, 7 days a week, and so I can completely understand where, you know, Pulver and Brogan and Penn and all of these people who represent their companies are coming from, because that's what, you know, that's my line of work as well. If I didn't do that, there would be no roof over my head right now, and that would be a problem. But the other thing, too, is that I know that, I mean, PodCamps are all nonprofit. I mean, the idea is that you're not supposed to host a PodCamp because you want to walk out a millionaire. You're supposed to host a PodCamp because you want to empower people and teach others the ways of new media. And so even for Chris Penn and Chris Brogan, who look at it, I think they're still going to end up considering PodCamp Boston 2, at least from my point of view, a success, because there were still new bloggers there and new podcasters there and new video podcasters there, or people who aren't in this space at all who came to learn how to get into this space. From a sponsorship point of view and a monetary point of view, I'm positive that they're going to lose money on this because they had t-shirts made for $1,200 and so on and so forth. So from a business point of view, I can certainly see them looking at this past weekend as a failure. But I think from that community perspective, and, you know, the one thing that came up over and over again is that podcasters and new media folk were people too. Jeff Pulver was sitting with us. Jeff Pulver's worth I don't know how many millions of dollars. he was sitting with us in that powwow at the back of PodCamp, listening and giving his 2 cents on how we could make, and he, how he could help us, or how he as a person and we as a community, including him, could make PodCamp better. So they're still people. So I think from a person to person and from a community point of view, they'll see it as a success, even if their business side of them says it was a failure.
Okay, I see. I was just going to say, but you were on a roll. I've been invited to give a talk on podcasting and how you too can podcast to an after-school program at the local library.
Excellent.
I'm kind of looking forward to that. It's going to be a mixed group of kids anywhere from 8 to 16, I believe.
And, you know, the funny thing is that, and this is something that I brought up a couple of times over the weekend. I said, you know, PodCamps really should go back to their new media school roots. I don't see any reason, and I'm already starting this here, I don't see any reason why a handful of people, 4, 5, 6, 10 people, can't put on a one-day, one-track event with the partnership of a local community college or a local high school, get everybody into an auditorium, get 1 hour to introduce the web, 1 hour to introduce podcasting, 1 hour to introduce blogging, one for video podcasting, one for social networking and social activities on the web. And if you really wanted to, the future of podcasting and monetization could be your last session. And really, one, I keep calling it PodCamp ODOT and the PodCamp ODOT model, and I this will be a blog post, and I've already started this one since I've come home from Boston. I see no reason why 5, 10 people can't, you know, swap spots on the podium, man a booth, free event, grab a sponsor or two. It doesn't take much, especially from a community point of view, to book a room at a local library or high school for something where you're not going to be making a profit at the end of the day. And really bring this back to a, I keep using the word hyper-local, sense where, I mean, you don't need 600, 700, 800 people, 1,000 people, 1,200 people to run a PodCamp. There is no reason you can't do PodCamp Kingston or even smaller than that. There's a village north of here called Sydenham. They've got 2,000 people, I believe. There's no reason Sydenham can't have a PodCamp. They have a high school. They have people.
And the reality is, I know you experience it in Kingston, and I experience it in Midland. I have to go back a bit. There was an 11-year-old boy in Riley, Alberta, who really, really, really wanted to have a record and really, really wanted to have a radio show. And 30 years later, I do, and I make them in my own rec room. I can do it all by myself, and it's a radical thing, and anyone can do it, and frankly, anyone should. But the reality is, I've counted, there are, as far as I know, 5 podcasters, or new media people, in Simcoe County. And I think your numbers are pretty much the same in Kingston, aren't they?
Kingston's about 120,000 people. I have so far found 4 who are interested enough in new media to know what Twitter is and know what Facebook is and have a blog and respond to the call for social media folks. So yeah, there's 4.
But these are the tools that are instantly available to anybody with a computer. The basic entry is consumer digital camera if you're video blogging, or $1 dollar store mic will get you started podcasting. Like, once you have the computer and the internet connection, you're good to go.
And, you know, that goes back to what I was saying about this whole PodCamp One Day One Track, PodCamp ODOT, which I know I need to come up with a better name for it. But, I kind of like ODOT. It's kind of stuck now. The thing that I keep going back to is, you know, you just said it. You've got 5 people in Simcoe County who get new media, right? If each of you, I don't know how much it costs to book a room at a high school in your area. Here, I can book the auditorium in a local high school for about $160 for the day because I'm not making money off the event. There's four of us here. That's $40 each. Well worth the investment to book the high school or, you know, a room at the local library.
And that'll likely come free if you can convince the librarian.
And, you know, borrow their technology, advertise it, and do a pod camp to teach the next five people. Get your five people locally to volunteer their time, to help you promote it, to post it on their blogs, to man the registration desk, to keep their eye on the wiki. Give it a month for registrations, and go for it. All of a sudden, you've now got 10 people, and who knows the age range of the people who show up. You'll have the 12 and 13-year-olds, which is awesome, because that's the next generation that's really going to take, I think once they hit their 17, 18, 19-year-old area, that generation's really going to shake up the business world because they've been connected all their lives now, and a lot of them are hosting podcasts and video podcasts and even starting companies these days. But I think that generation will shake things up in a few years' time. But there's no reason why the 13-year-olds who show up and the 20-year-olds who show up and the 30-year-olds and 50-year-olds who show up, that older group can be your volunteers the next time around. So PodCamp Simcoe County, or PodCamp ODOT Simcoe County, now has 14 volunteers. Hey, we're getting pretty up there, and that's even more people to spread the word, even if you only trust the three or four of them who started with you to man the desk and actually do the work. You've now got a whole bunch of new voices who can spread the word of this, and all of a sudden you've got a group of 50 showing up to learn, or 75. And I really do think that the PodCamp model needs to start shrinking. Because as great as these large, and going back to what I said in the Saturday session at PodCamp, as great as these large events like the PME and like PAB, and like what seems to be the trend with PodCamp, as great as these large fishbowl gatherings are, because it gives us a chance to hang out with each other and get to know each other on a personal level and learn from each other. I don't know a lot about audio production. I can learn it from Mark. I don't know a lot about some of the tools that are online. I can learn that from other people that are there. As great as those events are, that's not expanding this market. And people are going to show up and say, hey, there's 1,100 people here. I don't fit in. And so PodCamp really needs to get back to this 20 or 30 or 50 or 70 person model where it's three or four experts, five or six volunteers teaching 15 or 20 people how to do this so that those 15 and 20 people can go out and find their niche audience and then continue this trend on and kind of really build this out.
You're bending my brain again.
I'm sorry. This is what I do after PodCamps.
This is good.
And during.
Comment number one is, I can't wait to see the blog post when you develop these ideas.
See, this is why I need to blog more frequently.
Comment number two, will you please go to podcamptoronto.pbwiki.com mm-hmm. and sign up this particular idea as a session?
I'm signing up two sessions for PodCamp Toronto, and I will be doing a session on PodCamp ODOT, and my second session is called Can I Borrow My Office? Which is a session about how I use absolutely no desktop applications, all strictly web-based applications to power my office so that your laptop, should I need it, can instantly be my office if, you know, I'm in a pinch.
Your office can be any space that you find anywhere that you are, can't it?
Yeah, because I work from home, there's a few catches to a couple of the things I do that do still require desktop applications, but my office, for the most part, when I was on my way to... where was I? I was in Toronto, actually, for the Adobe event at the end of September, and the only internet connection I knew of while I was wandering around trying to kill an hour was within the Coach Canada Greyhound terminal. They have these public internet terminal things, and they're absolutely disgusting. I really don't want to know what people have done to these things. But it was an internet connection because I had no computer that I knew was available to me. So I went and I spent $7 in loonies and popped it in and had 25 minutes at this thing. And I got three quotes sent out to clients. I mailed two invoices. I looked over proposals from a few people. I checked my email. I checked my RSS feeds. Everything I do on a day-to-day basis within my working environment was done at this public internet terminal because all of my tools are web-based.
Wow. Thank you very much for your time. You can find Tommy Valier at TommyValier.com, and you can also find his TalkShoe show on TalkShoe.
At TalkCast ID number 16829, we're live every Friday night. It's myself and my co-host, Rob White, do that show.
Wonderful.
And I'll see you in Toronto.
For sure.